This is a Sounds Good special, Wellness in the Time of Coronavirus. I'm Tracy Ross. I don't know about you, but the last few weeks have left me feeling a little freaked out. It's not often that we're faced with a situation for which we have no real frame of reference. From working at home, or not at all, school and daycare closings, the very real difficulties of obtaining food and supplies, and just staring at the same four walls every day, we're all trying to get used to the abnormality of our new normal, so much so that we may be neglecting our own wellness. Last week, I spoke with four regional experts on wellness in an attempt to figure out how to navigate our strange new landscape without sacrificing our mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual health. First up is Dr. Mike Bordieri. Mike is a licensed clinical psychologist and assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Murray State University. We've had dozens of conversations over the years as part of his mental health series on Sounds Good, but none of them have ever been like this.
I got a baby who's awake but happy right now, a room or two over. Maybe I should get in my closet. I don't know.
No,
I
have... you're fine.
I'm fine.
Okay. You're fine. I don't know where you want to begin, but let me suggest we start with toilet paper. That seemed to be one of the bellwethers for people really, A, taking this seriously, and B, maybe reacting in ways that aren't mentally healthy.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you hit it exactly right, that the toilet paper really is a great embodiment of what this looks like from a psychological perspective. As we're learning to cope with the new world, I think one of the biggest features we can kind of hold on to about this crisis is that of uncertainty. And I think that's where the toilet paper bind comes from, right? Where we're living with a disease we don't particularly understand, with a course that we don't know, with outcomes for ourselves and our world that are uncertain, with a timeline that, you know, is not clear. And given that high level of uncertainty, humans, we don't do great with that. We really don't like sitting in places where we don't know what's happening, where the script has changed, where our understanding of the world is shaken. And I think, you know, COVID-19 has done all of those things. We fundamentally are in a different world, and it's difficult to cope with. And I think that's where the toilet paper comes in.
I've heard some people say that it's a way people can take control of some aspect of their lives. And I guess in that very limited part of our lives, but very important part, then hoarding a bunch of toilet paper can meet this need.
Yeah, I think that's a great theory, because this is not an area we have a lot of good research with, right? This is not an area where there are lots of psychological studies out there. But the few that have kind of been in this direction, I think point to exactly what you're suggesting, that a big piece of this is about claiming control in an area where, in a point in our life, in a point of human existence, where so many things are outside of our control. And some of this is, unfortunately, that the sort of fear and panic buying feeds on itself, right? That, you know, it's one thing to have uncertainty, but then when we go to the shelf and we don't see any toilet paper, then it makes it real, right? And so then we need more. And of course, the more we do that, the more the shelves are empty and the more the cycle grows. So, you know, I'd be hesitant to say that this is completely irrational. I think it makes sense psychologically why we want to do this. We want to be secure. We want to feel safe. We want to have a sense of normalcy in our life. And yeah, for I think many people, toilet paper fills a little of those psychological voids right now.
Was there a certain type of patient that you were more worried about when you first knew that social distancing was going to have to be our new normal for a while? Or was it a general concern for everyone who's undergoing treatment?
Yeah, I think it's both and actually more. A concern for not only everyone in treatment, but also everyone. As it's clear that the psychological impact of COVID-19 is real and likely worsening. That is, we really are going to be contending with a mental health crisis on top of what we already have as a public health crisis. And, you know, in terms of specific individuals or types of individuals who might be at risk, I think the big ones that come to mind are depression and anxiety. Depression because part of, you know, the core of social distancing, which is so important from a public health perspective and something we absolutely need to do and keep doing, also comes with a psychological cost. Right. That, you know, one thing we know is what's essential for psychological health is social connection. Right. And so I think that's one of the challenges and tensions we're seeing now. And one thing that I think is promising, and we see this from the World Health Organization and some other international efforts, is really to rebrand social distancing, not so much as social distancing, but instead physical distancing. Right. How can we sort of maintain physical distance, which is essential from an infection control perspective, but at the same time maintain, if not build, our social connections with one another? And I think we're seeing some pretty innovative ways of that happening right now, right? Where people are able to get together, whether it's using video chat or phone calls or you know, Twitter and social media and other places to try to maintain a sense of social connection, of belonging and community at a time where physically we need to be distant. So that would be a piece where depression, I think, really can come in. Because one of our core theories of depression is something called behavioral activation. People tend to do better when they're moving around lots in their world and contacting lots of things. And of course, social distancing kind of closes our world down, which is something we see in depression. So I think that's one of our big challenges ahead. I think on the other side of this, you know, I mentioned anxiety is another disorder where we worry. And I think there is, we know that, you know, anxiety feeds on uncertainty. And as we talked about at the beginning of our chat here, you know, this crisis is marked by uncertainty. And so for people who struggle with that and whose minds really, really sort of struggle and try to take charge of making sense of anxiety, this really presents a challenging time. So I think those individuals might be in need of extra support, but I think all of us are going to need to take our psychological health into consideration as we work our way through this crisis.
How do you process just coronavirus from the perspective of we don't really have a point of comparison? There are very few of us alive who were around in 1918 for the Spanish flu, and everything is different now than it was then. I mean, do you have any way of projecting what the mass psyche of mankind is going to be after this?
That's a tall order. And so the short answer would be no, but the longer answer might be maybe. Because I think you're really hitting on something that's essential here, is that this is a new normal. There's not necessarily a going back to how things were before. And let me be clear, I don't mean that to sound alarmist or fatalistic. I think absolutely we're already seeing some amazing results. Our healthcare professionals around the globe and scientists and researchers are coming together to find ways to fight this virus. I have no doubt that we will be successful. I think the length of the sort of fight and then the international effort to contain this is going to be measured in months, if not years. But I do think there will be a time after coronavirus. As to what that time looks like, that's where I think there's quite a bit of uncertainty as well. I think there will be a new normal. And so what does that look like? On one hand, there might be some things we're giving up. So things as, you know, fundamental as the handshake, which, you know, we see as like the cornerstone of business relationships and how we sort of know and relate to each other. This could make that go away forever. We might have to evolve and change in areas like that. And so I think there will be sort of a new way of relating to each other in our world. But I think that story hasn't been written yet. And unlike the coronavirus, where we don't have control right now, we are not in control of the virus and how it replicates and the biology of it, I think we do have some control and say in how we as humans adapt to it. And so I think what's in front of us here is a real opportunity, not just at an individual level, but really at the level of our communities and countries and the world to see how are we going to respond to this. And there, I think there are a couple different paths, and it's not one that the virus will determine, but really one that we're going to determine what it looks like. So one direction might be cooperation and really a breaking down of barriers and coming together. This is something we're already seeing in the international scientific and medical communities, and it's wonderful, right? We're seeing a level of scientific collaboration around the globe that really has never been seen before. And so I think there's tremendous promise there, both to enhance and hasten our response to the coronavirus, but potentially laying the groundwork for a new era of cooperation among global scientists. So that's an example of something that could go really well, that we might end up being in a better world than we are now. I think, unfortunately, though, we're also seeing signs of putting up barriers and walls, right? That the idea of blame and prejudice and stigma, and we're seeing that now, unfortunately, among many Asian American experience here in the United States, where there's a level of stigma or insistence on calling this a virus from a particular country and region. And so that could be detrimental, and that could really lead to a more fractured world, a world with more inequity. And so I think we don't know our story yet, but it's a story that we do have some control over. And I hope there's an opportunity here, both from a psychological perspective, but really from a human perspective, for us all to look to ways to contribute, to cooperate, and to use this as an opportunity to grow and to grow closer together, as opposed to fighting one another or leading to conflict.
One thing that I've noticed over the course of the past few weeks is how adaptive human beings are. The situation we find ourselves in now is absolutely unprecedented. And yet, people have found a way to establish a social connectivity long distance, and much like we're doing right now. And does that give you hope for us finding our way toward the new normal in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think here, happily, the answer is yes. Humans are remarkably resilient. And that isn't to, you know, disparage or in any way minimize the amount of suffering that's present right now. We know that this is a difficult time. We know that there's immeasurable psychological cost to this crisis, that we're going to see increased rates of trauma and grief, and there's absolutely a psychological toll here. So I think on one hand, it's important that we acknowledge that, to make space for that, and to honor our experiences and the experience of others who are going through this difficult time. But I think you're hinting at something that's really important here, is that humans are quite resilient, that we look at the area of psychological strengths, and that we can see that humans have huge coping reserves and unique ways of coping with the crisis. And I think that's going to be one of the most exciting areas to look at as we move forward with this, is to learn all of the innovative ways that we're coping with this, that we're learning to use our own strengths to find a sense of normalcy within this very abnormal situation, and possibly even a way of growing from this. There's an area of the psychological literature called post-traumatic growth. It looks at the ability for many individuals in the face of trauma to, yes, experience it, and experience it includes suffering and the distress that's there. But if you follow them out over time, you see that there's growth. There's an opportunity to learn, to better oneself from these experiences. And so I think that's going to be a major avenue of research and a major avenue for all of us to kind of pursue as we learn to live in our new normal.
What about if this goes on longer than we think it will? Now, it's kind of a loaded question because we literally don't know when this will end or this phase will end. I think some people are hoping it will be early fall, but I think some people project it could be January of next year before things resemble normal in many areas of life. What does a long-term isolation do to us collectively?
Yeah, the research there is not promising. You know, some of the spaces we see this, for example, are looking at individuals who are incarcerated and the use of secure housing units or, you know, sort of the whole or isolation, solitary confinement as a technique in our criminal justice system. And there we know the psychological effects are devastating. And so I think what's important as we look for this being more long-term than we might think, and possibly cyclical, right, that we might go through waves of isolation and then coming back and isolating again, that it's important to live as psychologically healthy as possible in our current world. So I think this might be a good opportunity to chat a bit about what are the things we can do, even though we are practicing this physical distancing, to take care of ourselves and encourage our psychological health. And probably one of the biggest ones that we've already kind of hinted at here is maintaining social contact, often, early, and as frequently and as meaningfully as possible. And so there we're looking for ways of building in small but meaningful social connection, whether they brief phone calls, video conferencing, you know, and looking for a variety of ways of connecting, right? Whether it be colleagues, friends, family, you know, virtual movie nights, children play dates. There are lots of ways to use technology. Because you mentioned that, right, this is kind of a once in a lifetime event. We have something over 100 years ago is really our closest point of reference, but a lot's changed in the last 100 years. And we have a tremendous amount of technology now that can allow us to connect even at a physical distance. So I think now is a time to utilize that as much as possible and to make it a routine, even if it feels awkward at first. You know, as we adapt to this, we can get more comfortable and better able to use technology to help us connect with. There are probably a couple other things we can do as well. And one is really maintaining a sense of normalcy or routine as much as possible, right? Trying to develop a sort of day-to-day routine that looks as close as possible to what things were like before this came upon us. So getting dressed, basic hygiene, taking showers, putting on clothes, have a psychological benefit, right? So even if you're in your house, you know, even if no one's going to see you, just putting on an outfit, taking a shower, sitting down fresh for the day confers some psychological benefit. I think one thing we're really important to look at is exercise at this time and getting out and finding ways to get moving, whether that's safely in your own home or if you can social distance and find a place like a nature trail to go. That can also help maintain sort of a healthy lifestyle with all of this. You know, the final pieces to look at here are just the sort of standard things we do to take care of ourselves, making sure as much as possible we're protecting time for sleep, right? That we're eating as balanced and nutritious meals as possible. And that we're, you know, being kind to ourselves and practicing things like relaxation techniques or sort of giving space to unwind and then to acknowledge that this is a crisis and that we're doing the best we can. So there's a lot we can do, but, you know, it's still going to be a challenge, even with doing everything right. Right now, one of the best things we can do is to treat this as an opportunity, not an opportunity any of us wanted or signed up for, but as an opportunity with the world getting smaller to find meaning and purpose in small things in our life. And to look as much possible to taking each day as an opportunity for that, to use this as an opportunity to look for kindness and connection over sort of stigma or sort of isolation or prejudice, and to, you know, to take this as an opportunity to learn and grow through what is going to be a really difficult period. I think, you know, one final note to end on here as well is that help is available for folks who need it. As we said, I think there really is a mental health crisis that's right alongside this public health crisis. And, you know, it's not as visible yet. I think it will increasingly become so. So it's important that folks know that there are services available. We've seen a huge increase in telehealth, ways of getting psychological health at a distance, so maintain safety but still get support. And so I think it's important for our listeners to know that help is available and that it really is a sign of strength to reach out for help, especially at a time like this, because you're doing that for yourself, your family, and you're making sure you're going to be in the best position to navigate the, you know, difficult but manageable road ahead.
That was Dr. Mike Bordieri, a licensed clinical psychologist and assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Murray State University. After the break, I'll speak with Katie Englert, president of Compass Counseling in Paducah, when wellness in the time of coronavirus continues. This is a Sounds Good special, Wellness in the Time of Coronavirus. I'm Tracy Ross. Last week, I spoke with four regional experts on wellness to find ways to stay healthy during this unprecedented time. Next is Katie Englert, a board-certified telemental health therapist, licensed professional clinical counselor and supervisor, and president of Compass Counseling in Paducah. Katie has been practicing telehealth for over 2 years and is one of the few, if not the only, board-certified telehealth practitioner in Kentucky. So she is unusually well-qualified to talk about social distancing from a telehealth perspective.
I think as soon as I realized that this was going to be a thing, my absolute first thought was, we're ready for this. And when I say we're ready for this, I meant Compass, or my team was ready for this, because we've been training in telehealth. I'm a board certified telemental health therapist just because I was curious about telehealth and I wanted to be able to offer it. And I've been board certified for a couple years now. And so that's the first thought. The second thought was, just kidding, we're trained for this, right? And then, but we're going to have to adjust every system we have to help our clients ease into a major transition. And then I had a third pop in. You know, I had a training developed for the state of Kentucky with CEUs. Aside from my team, I had trained 7 people, other therapists throughout the state of Kentucky in 2019. So I had a board approved training with CEUs. And so I thought about all of the therapists across Kentucky who needed that information fast. My brain's a little bit like popcorn, so it's hard to have just one thought sometimes at a time. So that was my initial cluster of thoughts.
What's the transition been like to doing everything through telehealth now? Do you feel it suits needs of clients as well as in person? Is it a different kind of therapy and help?
I think when clients first think of telehealth, there's a hesitation there, especially current clients, because they have a certain way of doing things. And it's not just clients in therapy or counseling, it's just people. So we get used to doing things the way we like to do them. And if it's a choice or an option, it's like, meh, I want to keep doing things that are safe and comfortable the way I always do them. And that's across the board for just people in general. So I think that there's that hesitancy. Yeah, we've been offering this as a supplemental service or a convenience for people for a couple of years now, but this situation made it important for people to decide, am I going to stay on track? Am I going to kind of fight for something that's a little different for me or outside of my normal routine and rhythm? Or am I just going to stop completely until I know, you know, what's going to happen? And we're a month in and we still don't really know what's going to happen. So some people who even initially were like, I want to wait until I know more about what's going to happen. I'm not ready for telehealth. We had a lot of people do that. And still some people are doing that. But I think some people have really just taken it out on a limb here and said, yeah, I'm going to give it a go. And when I talked to my team, I work with consultants all around. And one consultant said to me, we were having a meeting of people who kind of do what I do. And he said, you know, when I was talking to my team, I was just talking about it like if your flight got changed. So you are ready for your trip. You show up with your luggage and your baggage. And if they change the gate, would you say, nope, I'm going home. Like, I'm not going to get on my flight. I'm going to go home because I had to change the gate. So we're changing how people are connecting with their therapist or their doctor or whoever. But what we're talking about and the goal, we're still going on the trip. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. About how many clients a day are you seeing now?
So as a team, we're probably seeing anywhere from 40 to 70. This is for multiple, like over 10 therapists. So, so sometimes we have people that work a couple of days a week. And then we've seen a dip. We're a pretty high functioning team. And so we're used to, our therapists typically see between 5 and 7 people a day. So they're probably seeing about closer to 4 or 5, some people a little bit less. So we've probably seen like a 50% kind of a dip, but we're seeing that come back this week too. So we had some things that you know, some information. We were told like we were going to have a terrible week. It was spring break. Some just some different things like that. So, and I think the initial first couple weeks, people were just in total shock. Like everything, if you're a parent, your kids were home, you may have been laid off or your hours changed, or you've been asked to work from home. So you've been asked to complete all these lists of school things as a first time homeschool parent with your child and do your job and be worried about the, you know, global pandemic that's going on. And so there, it was just like, they say fight, flight, or freeze. And I think sometimes whenever there's just like an overwhelming thing that happens, I think we're just in shock for that first couple of weeks. And it was like survival mode for a second. So I think people are starting to crawl out of that a little bit, try to get back into as much as possible, whatever their regular rhythms are. So if people needed a break to collect themselves and figure out, is my insurance going to cover this? What's my budget going to be like? Am I going to be able to find a quiet place or sit in my car? From a counseling perspective, we've gotten very creative on walking our clients through that. So we've seen a dip, but we're starting this week, especially I would say in the past couple of days, we've seen people starting to call out and get reconnected, and we're taking new people. So that's been interesting that some people are like, yeah, I want to start now. And so that's hopeful too.
What you're describing is what I'd hope you'd describe, which is after maybe an initial what's happening period, people are crawling out of their metaphorical shells and trying to regain some semblance of normalcy, right?
Totally. And I think some of these things are out of our control, but there's a lot that we still have that is in our control. Like we get to choose how we're going to react. We get to choose how we think. Just because things are tough doesn't mean that we can't make some choices that are good for us. And, you know, if you have a severe mental illness, that's tricky too in all of this, because then there's been the navigating of the appointments and all of that. But for a lot of people who typically, you know, function pretty well and they don't have a severe mental illness, we all have mental health. So, I mean, it's going to be impacted for the good, or that it might be a little bit more challenging. But I think people are realizing, okay, I can either, you know, watch the news all day and feel bad, or I can take little chunks of that, and then I can start to do things that are healthy for me. I can take control back of my routine a little bit, or of my schedule. So yeah, it's really hopeful to see people coming out of their shells. For telehealth, if you see a counselor, as have ever wanted to see one, whether they're on our team or not, the likelihood that they are going to be able to figure out a way to work with you right now, it's very high. So I would reach out and connect with that person, whoever it is, because there's lots of options right now. We use a HIPAA compliant program, and it's just like if you were going to start an appointment somewhere else that first time, there are some things to set up if you're using a good HIPAA compliant program. But then after that, it's like whenever you go back to the doctor or go back to seeing your therapist, after you filled out that first little bit of information, you just pop on, and a lot of people like it. So I think it'll be interesting to see how many people are like, I think I'm going to stick with this. Even when we can meet in person again, it's pretty simple to get started. I think the other thing that I would share with people is there are people available to connect with. Even if you live alone, even if you are not sure of how to connect, or you're feeling lonely, there are different things out there that you can connect with in the community. So if you need help with that, reach out to a neighbor, or I mean, we're here. I know that there's a lot of other professionals around who are also available in a lot of different ways, whether that's to take care of your physical health, your spiritual health, your emotional, mental health. I know if you don't know where to get started, there's a lot of resources that are open and available. Just call one of them and say, I don't know where to get started. Can someone help me? And just reach out. I think that's important. And if you're in a neighborhood, I would try to call your neighbors. It's a good time. I feel like I've seen that a lot more recently. I know personally, I've checked on my neighbors more than I usually do or would have. So I think that that's a really cool thing, if there is a cool thing out of this, to reach out to see who's living life right next to you. And sometimes when we're busy, we miss out on that.
That was Katie Englert, a board-certified telemental health therapist, licensed professional clinical counselor and supervisor, and president of Compass Counseling in Paducah. Next is Eric Romanak, a fitness coach, martial arts instructor, owner of Siva Fitness Academy in Paducah, and author of the book Live Better, Die Slower, The Key to Making Health and Fitness Finally Stick.
You get on like Facebook and you see a lot of people, they're trying to make the best of it, and they want to get out there and maybe lose some weight, or, you know, start a physical exercise practice that maybe they haven't been engaged in. The big concern that comes to my mind, other than people's mental wellness, is really the idea that we have to remember that exercise is self-induced stress. So when we're trying to stay, have a real strong immune system response, the way we handle exercise needs to be very, very careful. You have to think of it more like a drip than a dump. So, you know, if we exercise too hard, then we kind of become like a pathogen window until we recover. So for a lot of people who maybe haven't exercised a lot in their lives, or it's been a long time, their heart rate can spike really, really quick. They can deplete some resources very quickly. And if they don't replenish them, then, you know, they kind of become immunocompromised. And that's obviously a concern right now, because we want to start building the immune system as opposed to breaking it down. So exercise right now is a really great thing, but it just needs to be done intelligently. And for those people who haven't done exercise before, a little bit goes a long way. I think walking is about, really, with an elevated heart rate, is one of the best things we can be doing right now.
Do you have tips to help people kind of take logical slow steps into home fitness?
Yeah, obviously there's programs out there, and there's, you know, some good trainers out there that are still doing virtual training. So obviously having some, you know, professional eyes, somebody who has the same mindset, you know, to actually guide you through, is the optimal choice. But if we're just talking about some practical at-home tips, I would say the best thing we can do, and this is going to sound very weird, but is to make sure that your breath is dictating your effort. And what that kind of means is that we have this primal response to hold our breath and grip under a stressful situation, right? Now, the thing about that is that's a great survival mechanism short term. But when you're talking about health, we have to look a little bit down the road. So one of the things that I like to tell people is just to make sure that you're exhaling very deliberately. Because if they're exhaling deliberately, they're controlling their nervous system a little bit more positively. And they're also keeping their brain involved. They're keeping, and this is kind of jargony, but they're still engaged cognitively, as opposed to defaulting to this reptilian fight or flight brain, which really, really depletes the resources of the human body.
Other than exercise, I'm thinking in terms of maybe diet or getting enough water. I mean, what are things you're concerned people may be letting fall by the wayside during this crisis situation?
Number one is sleep. If you're not sleeping, you're at a deficit. And that can be really, really hard for people to get things aligned to where their minds can shut down, their nervous system can, you know, shut down a little bit so they can actually get good sleep. But sleep is the king of health. Water and diet are the next tier for sure. So eating, you know, drinking enough water, obviously, which is usually, most people are not drinking enough water, even myself included sometimes, as the weather's changing. Diet, you know, this is a behavioral issue, which a lot of people can struggle with, but simple sugars and carbohydrates and processed foods, vegetable oils, that's about the worst thing you can put in your body when you're trying to fight off illness, because it creates inflammation, and all disease kind of breeds in inflammation. And then the exercise component is definitely up there, but it's not as definitively important as sleep and what you're putting into your body.
What about alcohol? A lot of people are apparently drinking a lot more than they ever have in their lives.
Yeah. So here's my honest opinion about alcohol is that health is a holistic model and physical health is a component of it. You got mental health, spiritual health, financial health, environmental health, social health. Health is health, right? So sometimes having a drink is okay. It falls into that mental health category. Obviously, excess is excess any way you push it. But you know, right now, a lot of people are doing what they need to do in order just to, you know, keep their kids going at home. It's very unique times. I do recommend that, you know, if you are having a few drinks at night, that you treat the day well. You know, you're proactive during the day and you're recovering and relaxive at night, if that's.
Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you think is important to discuss as far as wellness during this time of coronavirus?
The thing that's been on my mind a lot lately, and this has been my story for a long time, is the value of proactive versus reactive. And I think right now we are seeing a lot of our cultural mindset, how it may have hurt us, because we're very busy people. It's not that we don't care. It's not that we don't understand the value of being proactive with things like health and finances. Even as a business, I have to create bottom line health as opposed to just top line revenue. And we're seeing businesses that can't even last a month. We, as a culture, I think need to shift into this idea that intelligence is, we all think we're smart, but we need to adjust some of our behaviors that we are, preparing for the worst and hoping for the best in our lives. So when things do happen, because disruption will happen in our lives, that it's not such a big kick to the face, and especially when it comes to health. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's really what we're starting to see now as America is so concerned about the health of our citizens when, you know, 40% of our population is obese and under high risk of this being a threat to them. And that's very concerning to me. And that obviously there's a lot of reasons why that is, but that proactivity, that's the big thing I'd like people to take away from this. It's like, oh, maybe health is a proactive thing, because usually when people hear the word health right now, they have a negative reflex or before this, because if you hear health, it's like I'm at the doctor's office or I'm sick. It's not a positive word for people, but yet it is the driving force of our quality of life. So no health, you know, things become compromised.
That was Eric Romanak, owner of Siva Fitness Academy in Paducah and author of the book Live Better, Die Slower, The Key to Making Health and Fitness Finally Stick. After the break, I'll speak with Dr. Lori Ballou, a board-certified holistic psychiatrist and president of Temple Israel in Paducah, when wellness in the time of coronavirus continues. This is a Sounds Good special, Wellness in the Time of Coronavirus. I'm Tracy Ross. I recently spoke with four regional experts on wellness to find ways we can take care of ourselves during this global pandemic. My final guest is Dr. Lori Ballou, a board-certified holistic psychiatrist and president of Temple Israel in Paducah.
I have to not only base my thoughts on what I've studied and the years' experience I have, but I have to base them on the patients I see and the patients that I've been seeing for a while and then new patients. And of course, one of the things that seems to be at the top of everybody's mind is, when is this going to be over? How much longer are we going to have to be in like this? And another thing that people are saying is they're running out of things to do. So I try to help people reach into themselves and use their own creativity. People aren't aware of how creative they really can be. And now is a time that we can be our most creative, because there aren't people around to scrutinize us or to find fault with what our ideas that we're coming up with. So some of those ideas that people come up with, I tell them to go ahead and see what you can do in your own home or in your backyard to try to bring those ideas to fruition. Even if it's just a simple little thing that people think of to help you dig a hole in the yard to plant a flower. So I'm encouraging people to dig in deep into themselves and use their own creativity as a means of comfort and a way to keep them busy and give them something to do, a project. But not a project that you can read about, or, of course, those projects are okay too, but a project that you have in your mind. And then I have other people say to me, well, Dr. Blue, I don't really necessarily believe in God. And I'll say to them, but do you like to go on a walk? Yes. Do you like to go out in the yard and look at the trees? Yes. Do you feed the birds? Yes. Well, how does that make you feel? It makes me feel in touch with nature, they say. And so I help them to see that that is a point of spirituality, getting in touch with nature, getting in touch with those simple things in life, that is a point of spirituality, which for those individuals doesn't necessarily have to be praying to God, but looking at the good in the world around them. And that's important, important thing for us to do right now, because we're seeing so many people dying on a daily basis. The other thing that I encourage is for people to take care of their bodies, because it's easy right now to sit around, watch TV all day, maybe read if you like to read, and eat a lot of snacks. So I encourage people to eat healthy. And we know from science that stress increases cortisol, and cortisol causes us to put on weight. So we work on things to decrease stress and also healthy snacks. So I recommend people making a bag of their own trail mix. I recommend walnuts because they have omega-3 fatty acids. And we know from science and scientific studies that omega-3 fatty acids improve mood. And not only do they improve mood, they bring down bad cholesterol and bring up good cholesterol. So you're getting an extra effect of helping your mood and also helping you physically. So I recommend walnuts, almonds. Almonds are known to help with mood as well as help bring down cholesterol. And pecans, they have a healthy fat. And then so it has a little sweet, I say put in a few dark chocolate chips, because dark chocolate has amines in it that help mood. So make this little your trail mix like this, and you can have a little snack on that, maybe an ounce two or three times a day. So you're not putting on a lot of weight. You're getting something healthy, and you're fulfilling that need to want to eat something. And then I say, well, there's another neurotransmitter you have in your brain that you can generate yourself. You can increase it, and you don't have to take a pill. And those are endorphins. Well, what do people think about when they think about increasing endorphins? They think about running or getting on the treadmill or the elliptical. Well, you know, one of the most creative and fun ways to increase endorphins is to dance. So get out there in the yard and turn on the radio to some music you like, or in your living room. And if you have kids, get the kids out there with you, or your wife or your husband or your partner, and dance. Do this for 15, 20 minutes, three or four times a week. You've increased your endorphins in your brain. You've also improved muscle tone because you're moving your arms, your legs, your hands. And if you needed to improve muscle, you've done that. If you've needed to lose weight, you've done that as well. But most of all, you've increased those endorphins. So there are so many things that we as humans can do to pass the time that are healthy and that will help our mood and our body and our spirit.
Easter and Passover, they're synonymous with family and people coming together in a very physical way and reconnecting with friends and everyone coming together to worship. We've had to adapt in this time. I wonder, what do you think we lost during this period and are still losing in the case of Passover? And maybe what have we gained in the faith community from having to adapt to our current reality?
You know, we've lost that feeling of togetherness a little bit. Now, we did some virtual seders, and then I've noticed that the TV has had streaming services for Easter, which were very nice. So that brings togetherness, but in a different way. And time after time, if this is done more often, people will get used to it. So that is a little bit of loss. But what we have gained, we've stayed healthy. We've not gotten this horrible illness. And it's helped us to realize that we can have a togetherness in a different way and that God will still protect us and get us through it. But God is also allowing us to use our intelligence and our ingenuity and creativity to make a way for us to still be together. And 20 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to do this, you know. And I've had people say to me, they're so tired of being cooped up. And you know what comes to mind for me, and I think for other people, but you know, April the 21st is Holocaust Remembrance Day in the United States. And usually at Temple Israel, we have a interfaith service, and we have the Abrahamic Council, Faith Council there from the Jewish, Christian, and Muslim religions, and a number of people from the community to remember the victims of the Holocaust. Well, one thing that brings to my mind is Anne Frank. If people have ever read the Diary of Anne Frank, if they haven't, I recommend during this time is a good time to read it. But she lived in 450 square feet for 762 days, was not able to go outside, was not able to see other people than her immediate family. And she survived that time until she was turned in by a neighbor and was taken to a concentration camp and killed. But she and her family survived for 762 days in 450 square feet. Now, if she can do that, surely we can do this, because we can still walk out in our yards. For those of us who have cars, we can get in the car and take a drive. We don't have to get out and see anybody. But we still have the freedom to go out and get the sun. So I always talk with people about that too, not to make them feel bad, but to help them to see that they have that reserve in themselves. And that's what we often forget as humans, is what reserve we do have. The human spirit is strong. And if we can tap into our spirit, if we can look at that bird out there, put out some bird seed and watch those birds, that's very spiritual to me. And I think it is to many people. And for those people who miss their church service, I'm sure their minister wouldn't mind if they gave them a call, if they Zoomed with them one-to-one like this, because there are resources out there to help others get through this difficult time. But what I really want people to know is we do have it within ourselves to get through this time.
Is there any final message you have for listeners who may be afraid or uncertain? This is an unprecedented time. We don't have a frame of reference for this.
Well, we don't have a frame of reference. Most of us aren't old enough to remember the flu of 1918. So there is not a frame of reference as far as that kind of pandemic. But my recommendation for people is to live each day one day at a time. We as humans want to plan ahead. It's human nature. But all we have is today. So let's enjoy today. Let's not worry the day away, because then we've lost it. Let's enjoy the day. Sure, there may be hardships, but reach down into yourself for that little bit of sustenance that you can give yourself and make it through today. And then you can make it through tomorrow.
Your words were actually very uplifting. I think all of us need that during this time.
Well, I hope so. And I want you to take care of yourself. And when you go home tonight, I want you to turn on the radio or the TV and turn on some music. And I want you to dance, Tracy.
I will dance for you, Dr. Ballou. Thank you so much.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This Sounds Good special, Wellness in the Time of Coronavirus, was produced in my home studio in Murray, Kentucky. Thanks to Dr. Mike Bordieri, Katie Englert, Eric Romanak, Dr. Lori Ballou, and our contributing listeners for making this program possible. And for the record, dancing always helps. For WKMS, I'm Tracy Ross. Take care of yourselves. I can see but you when you dance.